Welcome to Mancy, a podcast about magic and how it has influenced our culture. In each episode, we cover a different Mancy or method of magic. I'm RJ Walker. I'm a spoken word poet and writer. With me is my co-host, Elle.
I'm Elle Alder, a professional psychic and solitary eclectic witch.
Last time, we did some important background information on augury, or ornithomancy, divination with birds.
Birds.
If you didn't listen to that episode first, you should probably go back and listen to it. I'm not going to take as much time on the recap going forward, so it's there. Just go listen to it. Basically, we went over the Roman practice of augury, which is performed by a priest called an augur, and all political decisions had to have augury performed before it could be executed. Now we're going to talk more about folklore and birds and what different kinds of birds might portend for the future. So more how to do augury than why to do augury.
Oh, okay.
Divination by bird.
Burp.
All right, so we went over the magpie song. One for sorrow, two for joy, three for a girl and four for a boy, or whatever. Now let's talk about some other kinds of birds. Most often, birds are associated with death in folklore and mythology. This is most apparent in the mythological stories about them. The first I'd like to discuss is the psychopomp. Elle, are you familiar with a psychopomp?
I have heard of it. I could not tell you what it is.
So not all psychopomps are birds. Charon from Greek mythology is an example of a psychopomp, a mythical being who carries souls from this life to the next.
Oh, okay.
Or guides them.
Yeah, that's me, actually. Like,
physically carry them or guide them.
Death doula.
Kind of. But mythical. Yeah, but like, yeah, mythical. In many cultures, psychopomps take the form of birds who lead souls to the afterlife. Crows, doves, and sparrows are all notable psychopomps. If you watch The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, while she's astral projecting, like, birds will show up to take her spirit to the next life, because that's the job of psychopomps.
That actually feels like a really good, like, hack for astral projection. Like, if you're wondering, if you're struggling how to get out of your body, envisioning that your spirit guides are birds coming to take you where you need to go would, like, be a really effective method, I would imagine, actually.
In the show, the psychopomps act as a timer. Like, you can only astral project so long before they're like, okay,
time to go back, or you're going to get lost forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about, speaking of doves, I was thinking about Peacemaker with the Electra of a Dove.
It's got to have a dove of peace on it. Ellen and I are watching Peacemaker.
On his, like, rifle that he's using to kill children.
It always looks like a ghost when I draw it.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
However, maritime lore has an interesting interpretation. And we're going to talk about that. But for some pre-context, Elle, are you familiar with the idea of a sky burial?
Yes.
Yes.
I am. It is a gruesome, but I think eco-friendly way of disposing a body in which someone is kind of laid out as sacrifice to birds, and then the birds slowly eat the body and let it be buried in sky.
Basically, yeah. The practice of sky burial predominantly comes from Asia, Tibet and Mongolia and other Chinese provinces around that area. It's a funerary practice. Usually involves leaving the body on top of a mountain to decompose and be scavenged by animals.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as the bird scavenging... It's typically birds scavenge
also,
on top of mountains.
If there's a giant bear who is like, dude, got this.
Rats or whatever.
Yeah, like, the goal would be that you're feeding, like, it's the circle of life kind of thing. Yeah.
The Tibetan people and many Mongols practice a sect of Buddhism that teaches the transmigration of spirits. Basically, the soul has left the body, and now the body is an empty vessel upon death. It has no inherent
meaning or
purpose.
And so then you can
use
it to, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Traditionally, Buddhists cremate or bury bodies, but the rocky ground in those areas makes digging graves difficult, and there's a lack of timber for fires. The sky burial is a practical solution. Also, like you said, it's eco-friendly. It's a spiritually generous way to dispose of a body.
Yeah, I'm down for that.
Giving back to the life cycle.
I don't know if they would let you do that anymore, but I'm down for it.
I think in these areas, they still
might probably do
it.
Yeah, probably not in America.
Yeah, I mean, I could check, but... Yeah, in America, I don't think they would allow you to do this unless you specifically filed for a religious exemption and reported
probably.
That you were doing
exactly
this to law
where
enforcement.
It was yeah. And all of that. And then they would have to be like, I don't know about this. What are the clear and present dangers that exist within this? Yeah.
Yeah. Some have speculated that giving the body to birds was a symbolic way to reunite with the sky or the sacred realm.
Yeah, to be taken home.
Yeah, but these speculations are not true. It's not quite so magical as that. That's a very Western way of thinking about this practice. It's simply an act of generosity to give one's flesh as food for living beings since you don't need it anymore. The flesh itself has no spiritual significance outside of being a container for the spirit.
It's just your meat sack.
Just your meat suit.
Yep. Yeah.
Just your meat suit, and then you donate it to the thrift store. The thrift store is vultures in this metaphor.
I mean, you know how people talk about, like, if people have a bunch of little yappy dogs, that if they die someday, the dogs will eat them, or, like, cats? Like,
yeah.
Worst things could happen, honestly.
Yeah.
Although probably the animals are traumatized. Who knows?
Spectre would eat me.
No, he wouldn't. Spectre will not eat two-day-old ham.
Yeah, okay, that's
like,
fair.
No, he won't. He would think about it. He would
spoiled.
Nibble, and he would be like, this is not wet food. where are my treats? Meow, meow, bitch. Like, that would be Spectre.
And whose fault is this?
Me. That's fine. I'm good. We have our morning routine where he comes get ready with me in the bathroom, and then we go downstairs, and he gets treats while I make Rocco's breakfast in the morning. And you know what? It works for all three of us.
So we've discussed maritime superstition many times on the show. There's kind of like a similar sort of overlap with the sky burial belief and this maritime superstition you'll find. And maritime culture is a mishmash of culturally exchanged magical beliefs.
Of course, yeah.
It's almost like its own, like, hodgepodge Frankenstein nationality.
I feel like maritime people have to be some of the most superstitious, just based on, like, how terrifying, like, life is.
I mean, you live your whole life at the whim of fate.
Of nothing, yeah. And you're like, I fucking hope there's some being out there that I could appeal to that will not let me get eaten by the tsunami. Mm-hmm. Like, that's your life, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and since sailors are a multicultural group, they exchange very heavily, and often, like, beliefs are parodied, you know, like telephone, but with magic.
Yeah.
Birds play a significant role in this culture. If you've seen the movie The Lighthouse, which we've talked about on the show many times, you'll recall
that... The Lighthouse,
that,
like, the movie of The Lighthouse and our opinions about them, about it, are basically a personality trait for us at this point.
Yeah.
Like...
Yeah, it's pretty awful. I mean, I do live in Salt Lake, where Sundance Film Festival is. I mean, it's
yeah,
in Salt Lake and
so
Park City.
Yeah, so we can have, yeah.
So A24 has to be a personality trait in order for you to be a real Salt Laker.
Yeah.
I
mean, no. Either you're a Mormon Salt Laker or you're not. And if you aren't, A24 is part of your personality.
Yeah, pretty much. So... in The Lighthouse, you'll recall that it's bad luck to kill a seabird.
Mm-hmm.
And this is because sealers are believed to have the souls of dead sailors in them.
Sealers.
Sealers.
Sailors.
Souls of dead sailors.
That's all.
Are you making fun of my dialect?
No, I'm not making fun of your dialect. You said it incorrectly. Don't go back.
There's no such thing as saying things incorrectly.
Leave it.
No
leave
such
it
thing.
In the podcast.
Language is made up.
Sealers.
So, like sailors, they can birds can be mean spirited and troublemaking, but are often willing to assist sailors on their voyages.
Mm-hmm.
Cormorants, specifically in Scandinavian maritime culture, were believed to be reincarnations of dead sailors come to see their lost loved ones. So, like, the seabirds will eat the dead sailors, and then they contain their soul, or their soul transmigrates into the birds. In general, though, this has expanded to all seabirds, to the point where intentionally killing a seabird could afflict you with a terrible curse. Albatrosses can fly great distances without flapping their wings and are especially significant. Lost ships could follow birds to, like, find land and get their bearings. And because of their long-distance abilities, albatrosses are the most likely to lead you from danger and are sometimes compared to angels because they just kind of, like, cruise
they're
with their
huge,
wings out. And
yeah.
They're fucking giant. This superstition is immortalized in the famous poem by Samuel Coleridge, The Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner.
I have never heard of this poem. Not ever.
Yeah.
I have no idea
just,
what it is.
I just never shut up about it, actually. So.
It is actually a primary personality trait of RJ, just his love for it.
Yeah.
In, like, a very non-ironic way, just like a, yep, that's a thing.
In the rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, I'll summarize. A mariner is lost at sea with his crew. An albatross leads them from some fog. The crew befriends the albatross, but the sailor takes his crossbow and kills the bird because, I don't know, he felt like it.
Because.
It doesn't really give a reason. It's just because. And that's part of what makes it such a sin. With his crossbow, he laid full low the harmless albatross. And this act curses the voyage, and the mariner... together. And the crew takes the dead albatross and hangs it around the neck of the mariner as a symbol of his sin. The whole crew starves to death and a ghost ship arrives. On board is like the Grim Reaper, the spirit of death, and another spirit called Life in Death that I guess Samuel Coleridge just kind of made up. And they are playing dice for the souls of the crew. Life in Death wins the soul of the mariner with the albatross around his neck, making him cursed with immortality.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I was raising my hand for everyone who is not sitting in the room with RJ and I. Is that where, like, so in Pirates of the Caribbean, they also play dice for, like, Davy Jones's crew members?
Yes.
Is it, like, is that a, just a thing that they did that is part of, like, mariner mythology and, like, who they were? Or does that come from Rime of the Ancient Mariner?
Both.
Okay.
You'll find that Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner influenced maritime culture as
a
much
lot,
as maritime
yeah.
culture influenced the
okay,
Rhyme
so
of
it
the
just
Mariner.
Is kind of a, like a feedback loop of
yeah.
like when something is so inherently true that it becomes a, what is the word I'm looking for?
Cultural landmark?
No. It's another, it's like a word that's bad that we don't say about people, but like, God, what is hold on. I'm having migraine day, and so the brain fog's real. It's like when something is kind of a joke, and you're like, oh my God, these people always do this, but it's really true.
Stereotype?
Like a stereotype. Thank you. Yes, like the stereotype, but then because it was so iconic and because that's who they are, then it's like embracing it more. So then it just, yeah.
Yeah, so like stereotype threat, where the stereotype
yeah.
becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
And then that... you know, goes to enhance it and, like, feeds into it more. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for your word-finding ability.
That's very true. That will happen with maritime culture. You'll find that, like, some guy read the Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner, tells it to the crew. The crew starts to believe it. They incorporate it into their beliefs. More people write poems about sailors doing ghost stuff.
With
and then,
the albatross.
Yeah,
and
then
yeah.
it gets put in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
And then Disney takes it, and they put a copyright stamp on it, and that's where it dies.
And then forever and ever inside of the Pirates of the Caribbean ride.
Yeah. Anyway, Life and Death wins the soul of the mariner who cursed the voyage and then curses him again, this time with immortality.
Hmm.
It is only when the mariner atones for his sin and gains respect for nature and experiences the sublime that the albatross literally falls off of his neck and into the sea. However, I mean...
he's destined to wander the world forever.
Yeah. He now wanders the earth telling his story to whomever his soul compels him.
Yep.
And I really want to be a cruise ship performer where
doing that.
I am a ghost sailor. And I just
no
stand
one
on
would
the
hire
bow
you
of
because
the
you
ship.
Would scare people.
I would stand on the bow of the ship and people would be like, who are you? And I'd be wearing like Victorian attire. And they'd be like, I'm searching for me lost love. She was to meet me on this spot. Have you seen her? Her name is Isabella. She wears a green brooch.
So do you remember, like, last, I don't know, a few months ago maybe, I was having dreams about, like, really, nice, like, RVs. Remember that, like, really opulent bathrooms? And then, like, that transitioned into, like, having dreams about cruise ships. I had a dream about, like, a cruise ship and being, like, traveling. And so now you're just going to probably feature in my dreams if I'm like, where's RJ? Be like, oh, he's on a shift. And I'm like, all right, it's at the bow of the boat. Looking over.
Or I could just be a straight up ghost pirate where I'll like hobble over to people. Because that's what that's how the story is told in the Rime of the Ancient Mariner. He's just this disheveled ghost sailor approaches a man who's just trying to get to a wedding and is like, let me tell you me story. And the guy is like arrested by his gaze and some magical force stops him from moving and he has to listen to this story.
Honestly, why don't we make this cruise? Like, why don't we just do like a magic ghost ship? Yes, no. We could do this.
Flying Dutchman LLC.
The Flying Psychic LLC. No, so like there are boutique cruises that have like 100 people, 45 to 100 people on the ship. And that would be the perfect like venue for that, that you just like wander around and tell the stories of where you are. There's a real career in this. I feel this. If you were Egyptian, you could do this on the Nile River cruises.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Largely, the main central theme of this poem is like a respect for nature, a respect for God's earth. It's part of the romantic era of poems where there was sort of this like return to nature as a response to industrialism. And literally the mariner sees like sea monsters and shit like out at the sea and he's like, these are horrible, it's horrifying me, but I'm filled with this sublime respect for God's earth and everything he's made, and all the albatross has fallen off. Oh, forgive me, I will honor Christmas in my heart all the days more, you know, that kind of thing. Life and death is like, okay, you understand the lesson. So
and it is life in death, not life and death.
Life in death.
Yes.
So like this undead sort of deal. So like the Grim Reaper representing death, life and death representing the undead. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess vampires. I don't know. It's only from this poem.
Like the undead mariner. Like
specifically
exactly like
him. Only the undead mariner.
Yeah, like actually just exactly him.
Angels show up and inhabit the bodies of his dead crew and like sail him back to shore and like wreck the ship. The ship like immediately sinks when it gets there because it should have sunk a long time ago.
Yeah.
The mariner's fished out and he's like, I have to tell me story to everyone. And he wanders the earth as, you know, the wandering man trope.
Yeah.
But yeah, the poem was highly influential. So if you've ever heard the saying, an albatross around my neck, or they're pinning an albatross to me, it comes from this poem, meaning a mark of shame being assigned to someone by others. It also spread the maritime superstition around the world, and it still persists today. Bad luck to kill a seabird. In 1959, a cargo vessel crew went on strike. The ship was transporting an albatross, and the bird ended up dying in its cage. Afterward, the main generator for the ship broke down.
Yeah.
The hot water and heating systems failed. Pay was delayed, and the crew believed it was a curse and refused to work on the ship after that.
Yeah.
Honestly, the majority of them were probably like, oh, you're not paying me?
No.
Strike.
Yeah, like, I'm good. I guess if you wanted me to show up for work, then
the,
you
the
would
captain
be around
really
me.
Was blaming it on the albatross.
Yeah,
though.
It's like,
mate, has nothing to do with me not maintaining me ship or the crew.
Albatross.
The me not paying the crew. It's the damned albatross died. It's bad luck to kill the seabird. I believe this was like a Canadian cargo ship too that was like going between America like through like Lake Michigan.
Mm.
It was like an old newspaper article. It wasn't very specific. It was an Ohio newspaper, which makes me believe that this Canadian ship was.
Yeah.
Yeah. This isn't the only folk belief that birds carry the souls of the dead. In parts of West Africa, a funerary ritual involves tying a bird to a corpse and then sacrificing it. This allows the bird to guide the soul to the afterlife. Psychopomp. In the culture of the South Sea Islands, coffins are made in the shape of birds or ornamented with bird iconography for the same reason, because birds are psychopomps that will guide them to the next life. Irish fishermen believe seagulls in particular represent the souls of drowning victims.
Oh.
I mean, if you think about it, they sit on the water and then they fly up like a soul rising out of the water.
Yeah.
Which... that's a bit of a stretch, but I don't really believe.
I mean, I don't know. Mythos, magic.
Yeah.
Yeah, mythology.
And now the story.
And now.
Of why the California seagull is the Utah state bird.
Yeah. Tell me this. I lost my Aaron's thinking putty, and I have to retrieve it very quickly. But I want to hear you. You can continue on. I just want everyone to know, like, when we're doing this, this is what I do.
Okay, we'll take a break. We'll let you grab your putty. I mean, it seems weird, doesn't it? Like, Utah is a landlocked state, and our state bird is a seabird. Specifically, the California gull.
I mean, yeah, but, like, also it's Utah. Also, we have, like, a giant dead lake.
Right. We have the Great Salt Lake, but the Great Salt Lake is also toxic, and there's no fish for the seagulls
to
eat.
Yeah, but formally, and then as people moved, you know, then the seagulls stayed.
Yeah, well,
because they're trash birds.
They kind of, like, use it as a migratory spot.
Oh, okay.
Where they, like, migrate inland.
They can eat the brine shrimp, right?
Not really.
Okay.
It's too salty, and they will get sick and die from swallowing the water.
Mm.
The Great Salt Lake has tons of dead seagulls. Like, if you go to, like, the beaches, there's, like, seagull corpses all over.
Yeah.
What they're really here for is bugs. Mm. That's really
yeah,
what
the
here
Salt
for.
Lake does have plenty of those.
Yeah. Why? Listen, I just want to make the case. If you're listening to this, Governor Cox, I know I talk a lot of shit, but
make me your poet laureate.
In northern Utah, we have exceptionally small owls that are only present here. They're endangered.
Which we found out.
They're endangered, and they're the cutest goddamn birds on the planet. They're called the flammulated owl.
And flammulated.
Flammulated. And they don't hoot. They boop. Boop.
Boop.
Boop. They only eat, like, really tiny bugs because they're the super tiny little owls.
How big are they?
They look like little wise boys. They're, like, tiny little wise boys. They're, like, the size of a mug. Like,
cute.
They're so small.
Adorable.
But, yeah, I think that should be the state bird. But seagulls, they're kind of a trash bird.
Yeah, they really are.
Their diet mostly consists of garbage. And, like, even other trash birds like pigeons, I kind of feel for pigeons because we introduced them. They were, like, one of the only birds you could domesticate, and they were, like, our friends, and then technology surpassed them.
Yeah.
And they just kind of got abandoned here.
Yeah.
But, yeah, seagulls, yeah, their diet mostly consists of garbage. These days, anyway.
So well, what is the story of how they came, how we have them?
There's an old Mormon folk tale.
Oh, boy.
About seagulls in which they became supernatural aid sent by God. And you find that's a big theme with birds, is that they are often supernatural aid. All the way back to, like, the augury days.
Of course, yeah.
Where they are supernatural aid.
Yeah.
The miracle of the gulls is what this story is referred to.
Okay.
Elle, have you heard of Mormon crickets?
Yes. I live in Utah. I've heard of everything Mormon.
Yeah. But the crickets specifically, have you
yes,
seen one?
Yes, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's this is also the story of why they're called Mormon crickets. Hmm. This is where they get their name. So here's the story. In 1848... the Mormon settlers were about to harvest their second ever crop.
Yeah.
The first crop was planted late due to the time they arrived. And they survived by foraging and hunting quail to supplement the poor harvest.
I did not know that quail were indigenous to Utah.
Yes.
That's awesome. I love quail.
This harvest was like a do or die situation. Like, last harvest sucked.
Yeah,
this
like
harvest has to be good.
We're going to die this winter or we're going to be okay.
Before the crops were ready to harvest, a swarm of
locusts.
Mormon crickets, these locust looking motherfuckers. And like Mormon crickets are black.
Mm-hmm.
They're
small.
They look like a cloud of like black.
The plague, the blight.
They do. They look like the fucking blight, like coming to devour everything. And they're also very fascinating. They're technically not crickets, but they called them crickets because crickets are black and they were black. Anyway, these Mormon crickets descended on the crops and began devouring them. And they were like, oh no.
Do you want to know actually what's weirdly topical for this story right now?
What?
I watched A Bug's Life last night. And this is the primary plot point is the, I guess it's the grasshoppers coming to eat it.
Yeah. But, well, I mean, know. That's an Aesop fable. The lazy yeah. grasshopper and the hardworking ant.
Yeah. Anyway, okay.
Is the core of A Bug's Life. Anyway, we can talk about A Bug's Life and Marxism later.
Yeah. Well, we can do that when we do, what is Bug Magic?
Entomancy.
Entomancy. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's probably going to be in the summer because to do entomancy, you turn over a log.
Yeah,
and see
we've
what's
already
under
discussed
it.
Like yeah. where do we find the bugs for this, and it'll have to be in the summertime.
Yeah. Anyway, these Mormon crickets swarmed like locusts from the Old Testament.
Maybe that's a sign that the Mormons should have gone home.
Giving like the early Mormons saw this and they were like, something biblical is taking place. Hmm. We are part of a biblical story now.
And now? No. Everything that they did, they justified by saying that they were the new bringers of whatever right. fucking testament. Like, it's not the new thing.
Well, this really, like, galvanized that even more.
Well, I'm sure that it was just yet another story of why they are the chosen ones
yes.
anyway.
Then, a miracle.
Yeah.
The swarms of Mormon crickets were countered by flocks of seagulls. Hundreds of seagulls descended on the millions of locusts. The seagulls came from the sky, from the heavens, and began ravenously devouring the insects. For 2 straight weeks, the seagulls devoured the swarm. The gulls would then fly away from the swarm, vomit up everything they had just eaten, and return for more. And this was a sign of divine providence. The seagulls weren't eating because they were hungry. They were eating because God commanded the birds to save the Mormons from the swarm.
Actually, I think that God was saying, y'all should go back to where you came from. But okay.
The crops were saved, and the seagulls have been venerated in the state ever
no,
since.
No, they really aren't, though. Like,
well, they're on the Utah flag
cool,
for
but like,
one.
They don't.
I would say that's venerated.
Do you know what kids do? Do you know what Mormon kids do? When they're 15, they go out to the Great Salt Lake and give them Pepto-Bismol and watch them blow up. Like,
I mean, they do that in California, too.
I know. That's what I'm saying, though. Like,
they do that all over the West. But still, I would say being on the state flag is being venerated. It's illegal to kill them. So doing that specifically.
Yeah, but that doesn't make kids not do it. They're like, no. Well, that's illegal if you get caught doing it.
But it is illegal. Even if they are a nuisance, you can't harm a seagull.
Right. And
it's
that is
bad
the
luck
thing.
To kill a seabird
that
anyway.
That is the thing. They're venerated, but people are like, ooh, seagulls.
I
like,
mean, they're still a trash bird. The story is also immortal. There's like a statue, like, for the seagulls to represent the miracle of the gulls, like a big monument in Temple Square with like a golden seagull. Yeah.
I just don't think a single fucking thing that the Mormons were like, this is a miracle, is a miracle. I think it was all signs for them to go home.
Well, we're
still here.
We'll get there. The story immortalized the crickets as well. These black grasshoppers were dubbed Mormon crickets after that. Instead of the black katydid, which is what they were called before, as the story of this miracle spread throughout Utah and then throughout the rest of America, recounted from pulpits and frontier campfires. Gilgal Gardens, that we've mentioned in our SLC Magic episode, has a statue of a grasshopper to commemorate the miracle. There's also that seagull statue at Temple Square, and lots of our like government iconography features a seagull and a beehive.
We probably are going to have to put a moratorium on Mormon miracles because I just don't care about them. Like, I'm sorry. I just don't care. Ugh. Annoying. Okay. Continue.
So, anyway, you've made it clear what you think.
Yeah, what my opinions are of that. I mean, like, I don't believe anything that the ancient, like, Mormon historians said about anything. Like, maybe it was 10 seagulls that came in. I mean, like, sure that, like, they're attracted to bugs. They probably ate the bugs to eat the bugs. And probably there were so many bugs for them to eat that they just continued going there because that's how animal brains work. I don't think that they were throwing up what they were eating to go back to save the Mormons. I just don't believe that.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to poke the logical holes that exist in this folk story. For one, frost and drought did more damage to the crops than the crickets. And
yeah.
God didn't seem to really care about those issues.
That seems much more in God's wheelhouse than controlling animals, but okay, yeah. Mormons.
Secondly, the seagulls really didn't make that much of a difference. Like, the crops were still eaten by the swarms of crickets. That's like a normal part of the Utah ecosystem that existed before the Mormons and continues today.
What? That's Go home, of, Mormons, is what we, it was.
It's part of why we have seagulls and part of why they migrate here.
If it's
here.
Really hard to make life work here, maybe it's because it isn't meant for you, but okay.
Yeah, the miracle, fairly unremarkable, pretty normal thing that happens here. Whenever the Mormon crickets swarm, predators take advantage. In fact, that is one of the biological reasons that Mormon crickets swarm, to overwhelm predators, ensuring that at least some survive and continue breeding.
Mm-hmm.
The seagulls regurgitating the crickets, also normal. Like owls, seagulls can't digest everything, so they regurgitate the parts they can't digest, like
right.
chitin.
And if you're still hungry.
Yeah.
And there's still more food.
Yeah. So, honestly, the quail that the settlers subsisted on after the crop devastation probably did more to save
yeah.
the Mormons than the California
yeah,
gull.
That's pretty miraculous. And, like, quails are really cool. I feel like, though, also they'd be easy to trap because they're just under bushes. And so you
And they're
like,
kind of dumb.
Yeah, they don't.
They're kind of like chickens. They're kind of dumb.
Yeah, quails are dope. I love them. They have the cutest little babies. It's almost quail season, quail baby season. That's in the summertime. Anyway, I'm much more excited about it. Obviously, I have something against the seagulls. Like, I think seagulls are actually really cool. I love the gray seagulls, like, that are gray and, like, speckled that you see in California. That's super dope.
Like, yeah.
I'm not a fan of people being like, the seagull's really important. We should go blow it up. Like, I don't – that doesn't work for me, and that's pretty quintessential, like – bullshit like that is associated with that.
Part of the like not killing seagulls thing and having them be venerated, I think, has contributed to this like fucked up social hate and attacks on seagulls.
Yeah.
Where people often will see attacking seagulls as attacking Mormonism and the government and like what's
yeah,
kind of what
I
they
don't
represent.
Really feel like
especially
that's the thing.
Especially shitty teenagers, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, like teenagers, I mean, it really is that like, and when you get, I mean, I think that we all want to pretend that like 15-year-old Mormon boys are better than other 15-year-olds. They're not. They're fucking not. And so when they're, like, upset at the church, when they're, like, arguing against their parents and that kind of shit, like, that's when we see those things. When it's like, why don't you just fucking leave the birds alone? And they probably came here because it was easy for them to eat bugs.
Yeah. And now it's easy for them to eat trash.
Well, and now they're, like, they're part of the ecosystem here, that if we just removed them, that would not really be good.
You can't remove them.
Right.
Not
without enough fucking Pepto-Bismol.
Yeah, we don't have enough bismuth for all of them.
Fuck. I don't know. It just is.
They're
Mormonisms
honestly,
have such, like, Mormons have such a weird, like, I'm going to believe that God has used nature to tell me that I'm supported in destroying nature. I dislike that.
It's a weird double-edged kind of thing where, like, when
that's not just Mormons. That's capitalism and Americans, but, you know.
Well, it's any sort of, like, radical belief system where, like, oh, the nature makes it really difficult to survive here. It's God testing us, and so we will be rewarded for surviving this. Oh, something has made life easier to be here. It's God rewarding us. And
well,
so
think about
either
The
way,
Witch. Yeah, in The Witch, I mean, the whole point is, like, God has
the movie,
punished
yeah.
you. Yeah. And they're basically like, you must make nature submit to you, otherwise the devil wins. And like that kind of idea where it's like, I don't know that Utah was really the place to be settling. But I guess it worked for them because here we fucking are.
Yeah. And I will say that like what they could have done is what – I mean they should have done is A, never be there. But after that, maybe listen to the indigenous people
right,
who
like
have subsisted
the indigenous
here
people who fucking know how
time.
To be here that already know how to work with – like maybe if white people were like, well, there's really not enough room because we've fucking destroyed everything with industrialization. I'm going to move out here. Maybe I will live alongside the indigenous people who know how to make it work here.
And
like
you know,
what was wrong with that?
What they probably would have said, they would have said,
fuck you.
How could you starve to death during the Mormon cricket swarm?
When you could just eat the bugs.
Well, they get turned into a flower. You can turn them into a flower and all kinds of food sources.
Right.
You can buy like Mormon cricket protein bars today.
Yes. Well, yeah, I'm sure you can at Snowpiercer. That's actually what they serve.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're eating cockroaches in Snowpiercer. But
I'm just thinking of like, so in the movie Snowpiercer, they're like post-apocalyptic, do not have anything to survive on. The only people that live are on this train, and they feed the like lower class, working class people bars of cockroach jelly, basically.
Yeah.
And so I because we were talking about Snowpiercer and how terrible it was, the connection was there.
Yeah. But Mormon crickets are
like
they're so much protein and they're
really easy
to eat. And
I feel like there'd be if they're swarming all over your food, would it not be easy to like make a net, make a box, make something to capture them in?
That's what the indigenous populations did for centuries before the Mormons ever arrived.
So there's not really a need to have God save you from the crickets when the crickets are the thing that you can subsist on.
Yeah.
But that's okay, Mormons. You look at you and your fucking statues.
What's really great is how the Mormon cricket swarms are – I'm not going to say rare, but
– I have not heard of one recently.
Well, that's because it's like an only every like 5 year kind of deal.
Yeah, I think it's like 5 or 7.
They like gestate over a 5 year period.
Mm-hmm.
And the danger of the swarms today is roads. Like if you drive over them, they get slippery because you kill so many.
I think this happened – I feel like I've heard of one of those happening in, like, maybe central Utah in the very, like, agricultural parts of the state where that was a concern in, like, recent history,
yeah.
I remember.
And they're more like grasshoppers. They're from the katydid family.
Yeah.
But we'll probably talk a little more about entophagy when we do entomancy. And I am a proponent of entophagy. You can hate me all you want.
I don't know. Why would people hate you for, like, using one of the, like, easiestly and most renewable resources, especially
because
protein?
Because it is gross and people are repulsed by bugs.
I mean, listen, the things that I eat, I don't love them most of the time. And so I'm like, if bugs were like a thing, I feel like I could maybe digest bugs easier than I could digest chicken.
I mean, Mormon cricket flour is gluten free.
Let's go for it. You know, let's just go into entophagy. And when people come over, we're like, oh, actually, we're not vegan. We're entophagous. So
yeah,
if you're not there, really think about your renewable, like, or what is it? The footprint, like ecologically. We're better. We're more sound.
We're
sorry.
Ovo-ento-vegetarian.
And actually,
eat eggs and bugs.
No children, because that actually helps the world as well. We're very, very eco-conscious in this house. Do you like that? It has bugs in it. Like, fuck. I know people who would do that, and we could be those people.
So, yeah. More folklore than actual miracle, but still, it's a very strong example of birds.
Like how birds can be that, like, harbinger.
Yeah,
yeah,
birds become this sort of, like,
messenger.
Divine interference in America.
I mean, sure, if we, like, looked back, but Mormons, everything the Mormons did was
so
just
magic.
So magic, because I think it had to be. You had to have those things that you could, like, cling your delusions onto. Otherwise, like, what would you do? What would you do if you'd spent your entire life being like, no, Brigham Young is correct? Well, we know what happens. I know those people, actually, and they don't deal with it, is the thing that they do. But there's so much magic with that.
Yeah. So I'm going to continue the episode with a bit of a shotgun spray. There's so much to talk about with birds, but I'm going to list off the omens birds give. So kind of like a map for what augury to do when you see a certain specific kind of bird and what they're doing.
Okay.
First off, some European superstitions. We talked about magpies, but corvids have more significance than just that. Jackdaws in particular. Jackdaws are inquisitive birds, and they are known for exploring human structures, sometimes getting trapped in them. They like to nest in chimneys, especially. Seeing a jackdaw fly down a chimney is viewed as a death omen.
Hmm.
This superstition applies to swallows as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you can imagine, like, being a fucking peasant and then you see this, like, jackdaw just go whoosh, whoosh, straight into somebody's chimney.
And you're like, they're dead.
Oh, yeah.
They're fucking dead.
They're fucking dead.
Yeah, it would be easy to look at that and be like, oh, that is death coming for them.
Yeah,
like,
that's the psycho pump to take
them.
Another death omen is a bird flying into your window.
I want, like, a tattoo of, like, psychopomps on, like, my back now. That would be so cool. Yeah. Sorry.
So a bird flying into the window. We just watched Hereditary again.
Yeah.
The bird that flies into the window.
Well, she, like, cuts off the
pigeon's. She decapitates it, too.
Yeah, which is just really interesting.
But, yeah, a bird flying into your window, bad luck at best, lethal at worst. Never
for her,
good.
For her,
never
it
good.
Was very bad.
Never good, especially if it dies.
Yeah. It was bad for her.
Yeah. It is never good to watch an animal hurt itself, even on accident.
Of course not.
That's
what
never
the fuck?
A good omen, ever. This is especially true for birds because flying is dangerous and they tend to hurt themselves a lot. If you recall what I said about psychopomps. Like, it's bad luck to bring a bird into the house as well, because you're bringing in the sort of death harbinger into the
house. I will have my harbingers of death whenever I want them, wherever I want them. You can't stop me. I am a witch. My dog is Cerberus. Like,
yeah, this specifically refers to, like, wild birds. Like, if you find, like...
Well, I'm like very specifically remembering at one point in my life that I saved a baby robin that, like, I don't know exactly what had happened. And I was working at, like, a cable company, and it was me and, like, the two other women that worked there. I was 19, and they were, like, 40 and 50, and we, like, saved this bird and... Anyway,
yeah.
I'm like, nuh-uh. I will save all the birds that I want. Thank you.
A bird flying into your house or getting trapped in your house, also a death omen. The biggest, most surefire death omen, though, a bird that has gotten into the house somehow that perches on the bed of a sick person.
Well, I mean, is that an omen or is that them coming to help?
Coming to help. Take their soul away.
Yeah, but that's not, like, death is not the worst thing that can happen to someone. Think about, like, the immense suffering that can happen instead of death,
yeah.
You know?
And a lot of people, like, you see this sort of iconography a lot when it comes to sick and hospitalized people and birds. Because birds are very representative of freedom. And so birds and prisoners of any kind, including prisoners who are sick, tend to, like, go together very well as a sort of juxtapose.
That was when my dad was in Maine. Like, the only good thing is that he had this beautiful view out of his hospital room over a river. And we would, like, sit and watch it. And he could watch the sunrise in the mornings. And we got to watch, like, the bald eagles. No birds flew into his window, though.
No. Birds on the windowsill of, like, somebody's mm-hmm. hospital room.
Bad omen. Yeah, we didn't have any of that. I think there was a dead bird, like, down and off. But, like... on someone else's room.
Yeah.
But I like that. I was like, oh.
There's a really great... So this, like, actually happened from the Tracy Aviary. So we, like, have a zoo that's just like,
birds, yeah.
Birds. And a lot of the birds that are there are rescues.
They I was going to say it's conservation.
Yeah, they can't,
zoo.
They can't live in the wild. And sometimes they're used for conservational breeding and study. But one of their trained ravens escaped the Tracy Aviary. And they couldn't find it. And it came to somebody's hospital window and made friends with this person. They, like, aww. Give it snacks from their hospital food. And then they were like, they saw that a trained raven had escaped the aviary and saw that it had, like, a little leg tag.
And he was like, that's my friend.
Oh, and he called the Tracy Aviary and they took the raven back.
Well, that was nice.
Yeah.
Did he live? Is he okay?
Yeah, he's okay.
Wow, that's kind of nice.
Like a broken bone or something.
So this bird just came and hung out with him and made friends. And he was like, I'm the coolest person ever. Yeah, I control this raven. And then he was like, oh,
this
you're
has
just
been
coming back for treats.
Specifically trained raven. I believe it's one of their novelty ravens that is, like, trained to take money.
Money, yeah.
And I love these. It's a way you can, like, tip people or, like, donate to the
aviary. Yeah, you donate
to
conservation, yeah.
They have a box with, like, two ravens. And you hold out money to the one you like the most.
Aww.
And they will take the money from your hand and put it in their box and then get a
They're
treat
like,
every time that they put money in the box.
I love money is what those ravens
say. Yeah, and they kind of, like, compete. And sometimes one will, like, try to steal the paper, the money from the other.
I have to be honest. If I thought that I had, like, found this, like, wild raven who wanted to be my friend and, like, I had trained it, it was mine, I would be like, this is it. This is the bringer of the cult. And when I found out that it was actually, like, a trained raven, I would be devastated. That would be terrible. My ego would never recover from that.
We're going to talk a little bit about that because there's currently, like, a trend of people, especially on, like, TikTok and other corners of the internet, that are trying to befriend corvids.
Yeah, and they're making, like, there's that one never mind. You continue on with your stuff.
Yeah.
I've been very distracted today.
Anyway, I want to note at this point that you cannot domesticate corvids.
No.
You can be their friends. They can be tamed, but they cannot be domesticated.
Also, listen, if you find a wild animal, please leave it wild. please leave it wild.
Yeah.
Let people who work in conservation and ecology do their jobs.
If you really want to domesticate birds, might I recommend the pigeon?
Pigeons would be easy.
Yeah. Well, they're specifically designed to be, like, they've been selectively bred.
Yeah, that's what they are. Yeah. They're
like dogs and cats.
I'm sure if you really wanted a pigeon friend, you could buy one. I'm sure they have
but
those.
But, like, a bird next to a hospital bed, they're ready to take that soul to the afterlife.
Yeah.
Other signs of death include seeing exactly 6 crows.
Okay.
Or hearing a whippoorwill singing near a house, because it's like a death knell.
Oh, okay.
If a sparrow attacks a swallow and throws it from its nest on or near a house, a son will be born and a daughter will die. Weird one.
Very specific.
Well,
this is when infant mortality was a lot higher, so there's that.
A woodpecker knocking on the house is a death omen. We had a woodpecker that would knock on our chimney when I was growing up.
I thought you were going to say the mansion.
And really loud, because he was knocking on, like, the tin siding.
Yeah, so he's like...
Really annoying. I don't know about a death omen, but really annoying. A peacock feather brought into the house is a way of taunting death. It doesn't mean that you will die, but it means that you are insulting death and bad things will follow.
I had a friend whose mother would never allow feathers in her home.
Because of that, a way of taunting death.
Mm-hmm.
If you walk under a tree in the evening and an owl hoots right above your head, it means a relative or friend of yours will die within a year. If an owl hoots while perched on your rooftop...
You're going to die in a year.
Yeah, death will pay a visit to the house. Other parts of the world say that an owl simply hooting in the neighborhood foreshadows a death nearby.
How about this? It is a natural part of life for people to die. At any point, there are lots of people dying and lots of people being born. And you know what they say? Boop.
Yeah. If a flammulated owl boops in your neighborhood.
You get joy instantaneously.
You get candy. You get serotonin.
Yay.
You get a little dopamine hit.
That's what I'm here for. That's what it pretends.
I should mention that I've been hearing a barn owl in the morning near our house, Elle.
I am unsurprised. I'm tormented at this point by, like, the visitation of death being imminent this year in my life. So it's a good time.
Birds are...
I like you're like, anyway. I don't know what to do with that, so keep going.
Birds are also omens for good luck and not just, like, death.
I would say, like, for me, birds are much more, like, joyful, fun, free. They, like, sing pretty songs. Even crows and magpies are really not that bad. Like, they're scavengers that take care of things that we don't want to.
I mean, sin to kill a mockingbird, right? They're just there to bring you joy.
Yeah.
They're seen as birds are seen as intermediaries between the natural and supernatural.
Mm-hmm.
Almost, so there's like the psychopomp side, and then there's like the messenger for the divine side.
Mm-hmm.
Ravens and crows in particular. In Christian traditions, ravens were believed to have a special liking for criminals and to enjoy plucking out the eyes of sinners.
Yeah.
Although I'm sure they just like to eat eyes.
I'm not sure
because
if you ask
they're
them,
easy
yeah.
to get to.
Especially if someone is tied down and they can't fight you.
Oh, yes, the soft part. Yes, yes, yes.
I'm going to eat your eyes on toast. That's what he says in Shrek.
So they also, like, fed sacred hermits and were used by Jesus as an example of God's providence.
Mm.
On the Muslim end, in the Quran, a raven is mentioned as the creature who taught Cain how to bury his murdered brother.
Oh, fuck.
In the Talmud, the raven is described as having been the only one of 3 beings on Noah's Ark that copulated during the flood and so was punished.
No fucking
on the ark.
Flood.
We don't have enough food for your babies on the ark.
Fuck.
Wait till the flood's over.
That honestly, like, we're going to bring, literally, I have chosen the two of you from each race of, like, creatures.
Species.
Yeah, that's
the kangaroos it. Had to swim here, and you're disrespecting.
And you're, no, I cannot imagine being like, I picked a male and a female for the purpose of reproduction. Not yet. Like, keep it in your pants. Anyway.
Indigenous North American and Canadian mythology depicts the raven as a creator, a rascal, and a trickster. Raven created the world and saved all of the animals from a big flood, but he also created a great deal of trouble among humans for his own amusement. And we also have Raven to thank for mosquitoes, I guess, as part of that mythology. That belief system. In Southeast Asia, a crow flying low across one's path as one starts on an important errand or trip is considered an omen. Interpreted as favorable, or favorable or not, but good luck, bad luck, depending on the direction. The augury thing where it's like the left side or the right side.
I mean, I think it's just fickle because they're birds.
Or it doesn't give a fuck about you and it's just trying
it's just
to get
existing.
Where it needs.
It's just a bird that lives.
It's just on his commute. I should mention.
Sometimes it's just a bird.
I should mention my source for these. I'm using the blog from the Raptor Resource Project, which is like a bird conservation project. So that's my source for most of these. The ancient Greeks believed that if a single crow appeared at a wedding breakfast, there would be a divorce.
Damn. Okay.
Don't let any crows near the wedding.
No crows!
In Sweden, ravens were known as the ghosts of murdered people.
The ghosts of murder. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, they're called murder of crows. Obviously, crows are not ravens, but they're corvids. A destroyed crow's nest indicates a fire in the area within 3 days.
Okay.
If a crow lands on a house and caws sorrowfully, a calamity is sure to befall it. On the other hand, if it's a joyful carol from... yeah. Then it's good luck. So happy crow means good day. Sad crow means bad day.
That just seems like looking at the moods of creatures.
don't make crows sad, I guess.
Do we do this? Like, do we pretend the day based on like Rocco and Spectre? Like if they have a fight in the first 5 minutes of the day, terrible day.
Bad
but
day.
Like if they can boop noses in the bathroom, then we're going to be okay for the day. It is very cute when they boop noises.
Other birds besides crows and ravens are related to luck and curses. Mm-hmm. It is unlucky to kill a robin or a swallow.
Bad luck to kill a seabird.
Swallows have been considered sacred because they were thought to have flown around the cross of cavalry. Mm-hmm. In some places, it is ill luck to accidentally kill a robin or a swallow.
Yeah.
But you can... cancel the curse. You can.
All you have to do is drink liquid death's reversal.
Basically, you have to give a burial to the creature if you accidentally kill it.
Just
honor. And you can avoid the curse. The poem "The Funeral of Cock Robin" refers to this tradition in kind of a funny way. If you break a robin's egg, something precious to you will soon be broken. Mm-hmm. As like a revenge curse. Mm-hmm. In church, I was taught, like Mormon church, I was taught that robins have red chests because they visited Jesus after he received his crown of thorns and were stained by the blood. Mm. And the robins are often connected to Christ in this way. And that means if you are not nice to them, you will make Jesus sad and you will be cursed. So.
I don't need the threat of Jesus to respect animals, but okay.
Yeah, you just be nice to robins or Jesus will cry.
I do love robins. Robin was the bird that we saved at the cable company.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was like saving Jesus when you save the robin.
Jesus isn't real. But yes, it was. I mean, sure he is, but not in the ways that people think he is.
In England, the stone chat is believed to be continually chatting with the devil when it is chirping.
I did not know you were referring to a bird. Got it.
Stone chat.
Got it. Is a bird.
Yeah. It's not a messaging app for weed enthusiasts. It's a bird. The stone
that
chat.
Would be stoner chat. It has two T's on the end. It's on my phone.
Yeah. So, like, there's birds associated with, like, Christ and God, and birds associated with, like, the devil and hell.
Of course. You know, there are only two kinds of birds, good and bad. Period. Yeah. End of discussion. Figure out which one you are.
In parts of the British Isles, the chicken is also thought to be a bird of ill omen.
Yes, because the white people brought it. Like, actually don't know if that's
true. No,
this
is the British Isles. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Where do chickens come from?
Dinosaurs.
What the fuck? Okay. Dinosaurs.
Have you not familiar with the theory that chickens are descended from dinosaurs?
No, I am, but I meant, like, geographically, where were they located and how did they get so widely dispersed? I think it's because chickens are very easy, like, on ships.
Easy to take care of.
If you're going to have, like, eggs.
Yeah, they can take care of themselves in the winter and you can just subsist off of the eggs.
Yeah, and they're easy to feed.
And they can eat just, like, sawdust and
literally anything.
Dirt.
Yeah. Yeah, so, chickens are pretty well.
They're just a really good agricultural staple. And
yeah.
Some sort of land bird similar to the chicken is all over.
Everywhere. Yeah. They also can't fly, so that helps
a
lot. Yeah,
and they're dumb. So. Yeah.
So, see, I was saying that the white people brought chickens everywhere, and then I remembered Hei Hei from Moana. And I was like, maybe not.
No.
Because they had some
white,
kind of
white
chicken.
White people were not the reason for chickens. They don't get credit for chickens.
Chickens have always been here
here. We didn't introduce chickens. We introduced honeybees, which proceeded to decimate local pollinator populations. So, yeah, save the bees because they killed all the other bees.
Because we have no other choice.
Yeah.
This is a consequence of our actions.
Yeah. Anyway.
Chickens are bad luck.
Chickens are a bird of ill omen on the British Isles due to an old idea that the rooster crowed for joy at the hour of the crucifixion.
Oh.
And I think it has something to do with doubting Thomas, too. Like when the chicken crowed, he would doubt in Christ a second time or a third time. Anyway.
What?
Yeah. Are you not familiar with doubting Thomas?
No, I am. I just – what? Like it's just a bird.
Yeah, but it
augury.
It crows. Yeah, it's augury. Also, the crowing of roosters is a way to, like, tell the time.
Yeah. No, I know that.
Yeah.
Like, because they crow when the sun comes up.
Yeah. Magpies carry a drop of the devil's blood under their tongue.
I don't think so.
And a lone magpie loitering near your house means the devil is afoot and stirring up trouble.
Devil is also not real.
Magpies can also talk like parrots, and I think that's where that comes from.
Magpies are incredibly smart.
Yes.
Magpies don't know no owner.
Yeah, they don't. Magpies only know eat nut, collect shiny.
Yep. yep.
In Norway, those in search of a drowned body would row around a body of water with a rooster on board, believing that the bird would crow when the boat had reached the spot where the corpse was. The rooster would be like, it's here.
Right here. I am disturbed.
Yeah. In Ireland, sparrows starlings? I don't know what this kind of bird is. And plovers are thought to be on friendly terms with fairies.
Aww.
And so you want to be nice to them because they'll pass on good messages to the fairies about you.
Mm-hmm.
The lark and swallow are both birds of good omen. The lark and swallow are also birds of good omen, as long as the swallow does not rest on the housetop. In France, there was once a belief that quail could foretell the price of wheat with their number of calls, prompting them to be called a bird of prophecy. So the quail would be like, meh. Meh. And then the stock market bros are like, fucking, is it a bull? Is it a bull or a bear? Is it a bull or a bear? It's a bear. It's a bear market.
did they have like a little setup like Mr. Gox had?
I don't know, but I think they were the OG Mr. Gox.
They were
French quails.
Mm-hmm.
an American superstition holds that to possess the feathers of a peacock in your home is super duper unlucky. A curse for appropriating beauty.
Yeah, to steal it.
So like the more European is like you're taunting death. The more American is like you're stealing beauty and will be punished.
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah. So it is unlucky. So that's transitioned over to theater culture, where it is unlucky to have peacock feathers on a stage or comprising of any part of a costume, prop, or scenery.
You know what's really wild is how closely, like, theater stuff is related to maritime stuff. Like, it's very intertwined.
I think that has to do with, like, vaudeville being a multicultural kind of deal. And, like, the appropriations
with, like,
of cultures.
Well, I just think as, like, theater was becoming what it was, because a lot of where you see, like, maritime language being used in theaters, like, with the, like, pulley system, what is that called? The fly system. And they use, like, to say on deck in different things. They have all of that phrasing for maritime, and I think it just translated really well. But also I'm thinking about, like, sailors and theater people tend to be, like, two of the most, like, superstitious groups of people. So it's kind of interesting, like, the overlap in
and
that
And farmers.
farmers.
Really,
well, because,
superstitious.
Because how like, it's really interesting that theater people are superstitious because, like, just say your lines. Although theater used to be dangerous with, like, open fucking flames. So, like...
And people would honestly kill you sometimes.
Yes.
Because they didn't like what you did on stage.
Right. So they're, like, now we're, you know, further away from that, but...
Also, if you think of, like, the culture of, like, mumming, theater people were nomadic. They
yeah.
would just travel beyond constant
Well, and I
tour.
Think they had to have, like, some way. So probably people who were ready to, like, not be on ships anymore but didn't want to stop traveling, like, went from being sailors to working on, like...
And it's also a mixed bag lifestyle. Like,
yeah.
It's inconsistent. You could either get a terrible crowd or a big crowd. A lot of money or no money.
But people love that. People
yeah.
love that. Entertainers love that idea.
But it also fills you with superstition because you're kind of at the whims
of fate.
Because
you're like, yeah, all I can do is, yeah.
Yeah. More on that in another episode, I think.
Fascinating.
In Poland, it was believed that girls who died unmarried turned into doves.
Why are we obsessed with whether or not women get married? Why? Like, why is every ghost, oh, she just didn't get married. Now she's sad in her wedding dress crying
yeah,
on the train tracks.
She like, wears a white dress as she waits
ain't nobody
for her
that
true
fucking
love.
Sad about it. Well, maybe yeah. some people are, but they're not ghosts for sure.
Although, if you're a woman and you die married, you get to turn into an owl instead. So
yeah, and then I'm going to fucking sit outside of his house. I'm just going to hoot.
Boop.
Hoot, bitch. Hoot.
Boop.
Your dad, bitch. Hoot. I do love the idea of, like, women, like, people are like, well, if it's perfect and precious, then they turn into an owl. And then, like, the women being like, yeah, and now I'm going to torment you.
Yeah,
like
well,
that.
The follow-up is that it is believed that owls did not come out during the day because they were so beautiful that they would be mobbed by other birds out of jealousy.
Or their eyes don't work well with the daylight and they work much better at night and they have really excellent hearing.
They hunt at night.
Because that's when it's
and
easiest.
And are
yeah.
floofy and quiet.
And maybe that's just how they are.
Dude, if the other birds mobbed the owl, he'd be like, great feasting time.
Yeah, like he just would destroy
They're
them.
They're apex predators. Like, don't fuck with them. Did a bird poop on you today, Elle?
No. Oh my God. Are you going to tell me what that foretells?
Yeah.
Tell me.
Well, Russians know that a bird pooping on you means good luck. There's going to be money in your future if a bird poops on you.
So when the reason I was laughing is because when I used to take tennis classes, we would play right next to this giant pond that had a bunch of geese and ducks. And one day we were practicing. There were, like, three tennis courts of people. And one of my friends got covered. Like, all these geese flew over, and they all just pooped on him just in the middle of a swig. And so
– wealthy. Going to be wealthy.
I should check in on him. I can't remember his last name, but I should really see how he's doing.
It's bad luck to see an owl during the day. It means that it's kind of gunning for you.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what? Fuck being nocturnal. I just want to look at this motherfucker and imagine ripping their throat out. I don't know.
Yeah.
If the first bird you see on Valentine's Day is a goldfinch, it means your spouse will be rich.
Okay.
Many birds are believed to carry messages from the dead. And to the dead, including mm-hmm. like sparrows, blackbirds, ravens, swifts, and doves. In France, the souls of unbaptized children who die are said to become birds until they gain entry into heaven.
Mm.
which is an interesting way. Like, what if you just didn't believe in that? What if you just didn't believe that unbaptized children go to hell? What if you just chose not to? And I guess there are many Christian belief systems that decided that.
Yeah.
Mormons being one.
Honestly, when I was in Lutheran school, the question of, like, whether or not animals go to heaven or hell came up, like, in my theology class. And my teacher, I don't know if I can say his name. I remember his name. I remember exactly what he looked like. Definitely a gay man who's definitely still in the closet and definitely married to a woman, which is fine. He can do that. But I remember this, like, conversation we were having about, like, heaven and, like, what happens. And one of my classmates was like, well, what about animals? And he was like, well, only human souls go to heaven. And my friend's mom
the Rainbow
freaked
Bridge.
Out. Yeah, she freaked out. And I just was like, what if we just, like, live in the place where we don't have to, like, live with the distress and duress of never having our animal companions? Like, what if we just chose that, like, babies don't go to hell just because they didn't get baptized? Like, what if we just decided that wasn't true? Because all we've done is decide that it is true.
I mean, it's all made up anyway.
Yeah, it's all fake.
Might as well make up.
Just live in the world where, like, your unborn child or the child that you lost to a miscarriage or that died when they were two is fine and will drain you in heaven.
But
just
I suppose
live there.
That's the point of schisms and the different sects of these belief systems.
I have such a fucking problem with thinking that, like, suffering makes one a better or more moral person. I fucking hate that.
If you are in the ruling class and you convince people that suffering makes them better, you can justify exploiting them.
Of course. And I think all of those people are not in hell, but actually living those lives. So good for them. I hope they enjoyed it for their one lifetime.
Speaking of messages to the dead, in Turkey, birds are given special treatment at graveyards. Hmm. A lot of their cemeteries feature bird baths and bird feeders. So if the living stay on good terms with the birds, they will speak favorably of them to the dead.
Oh, that's really sweet, actually.
And that's why you be nice to birds, because they will tell your dead.
Why would you be mean to birds?
Around.
Why would, like, what? That's why you have to be nice to them? What?
You can be mean to birds. You can be nice to birds. And you can not care about birds.
I just don't. Who's out here like, I need a reason to be nice to them? Just do it. Just be kind.
Yeah.
Wild.
Well, I feel like a lot of people just don't care about birds and view them as a nuisance.
Well, I know, but if you're going to an outdoor place and they're happy and, I mean, I don't know anyone who's, like, looking at a bird in a bird bath. It's like, fuck that bird. Fuck his bath. I have no joy.
Except, like, for seagulls and pigeons. And
I mean, I actually don't feel that way. And really, because I've been to Turkey and, like, pigeons are, like, a lot more plentiful and people really just don't, like, they don't bother them. They'll hang out by, like, cafes and stuff and people feed them.
Yeah, but
and small children chase them.
Yeah, occasionally you'll see, you know, a mean-spirited person. Just,
yeah, and I would like to go on record and say, fuck that person.
Yeah.
If you are that person, why? Don't do that. I have a lot of feelings today, I guess.
So in part three, we're going to cover different scientific studies that have been conducted with birds and what we can learn from them. So, like, the science augury, like we did with the mice. For now, Elle, I believe we need to go meet some birds. We're going to go to Allen Park. We talked about it in our SLC Magic episode. It's a ghost town in the middle of the city. A man named Dr. Allen created a community for people who are poor and also an animal refuge, particularly for birds. So it's like an abandoned neighborhood and an abandoned zoo at the
it
same
time.
It is
a very... I have never experienced anything like it, and I have experienced a lot of stuff.
It feels like The Last of Us, if anybody's played that game. Like,
it feels
sort of apocalyptic.
No, it feels secret. It feels like you found this, like, perfectly
village.
Preserved. Yeah, and, like, the amount of peacocks. When one time when we went there, I think it was right after they opened it up to the public, like in 2020, that fall. There were, I think, 13 peacocks sitting on one of the roofs, just sitting there, like, not doing anything, just, like, looking at you. And it's weirdly preserved all over the, like, entire park. There's, like, all of these, like, sayings. There's, like, wells. There's...
They're quotes from Romantic-era poetry.
Right. And it just looks like it's not really a neighborhood. It feels like you've stepped into, like, a theme park. and no one has opened it yet, and you can't go into anything, and you're just in this, like, little secret area that you found that you get to enjoy for 5 minutes before, like, they come turn it on, I guess. But it's there all the time.
Yeah, and because...
It's pretty cool.
Because it was an animal sanctuary, there is a lot of wildlife, particularly wild peacocks.
Yeah, a lot of wild peacocks.
Who live there. There's also a wild turkey.
Yeah.
Named Gobbler.
I hope I get to see him.
Yeah, hopefully we can see Gobbler. And there's the occasional, like, coyote.
So, quick question. Why are we going to Allen Park?
Well, I'm doing a play in Allen Park.
You are?
I'm doing a play in Allen Park in the style of Sleep No More. So, it is a walkthrough experience in this ghost town. And we are going to be telling the story of The Home of Truth and Marie Ogden.
Which, if you remember from, like, episode three.
Three or four.
Of Mancy.
Yeah, automatic,
like,
writing.
Yeah, when we did that, we covered it a long time ago. It was one of the very first stories we told.
Yeah. And we're going to be telling the story of The Home of Truth and the weirdness that happened there. So, we're telling the story of a ghost town in another ghost town.
Mm-hmm.
That's easily accessible from the city. It's going to be spooky. It's going to be fun. And it's only going to be running for 3 days, April 29th to May 1st. And that's it. So
can I buy tickets somewhere?
Not yet. We haven't put up the ticket website. It'll be on Eventbrite, though. We've decided to use Eventbrite. It's going to be titled Home of Truth, a Ghost Town Play.
Sweet. So yeah. We're going to go to Allen Park. We're going to go connect with Gobbler and the peacocks.
Meet the birds. Yeah. And then Elle will do a reading for maybe some of the cast members.
Yeah. We're going to go have a little, like, rehearsal walkthrough. So we'll go do that and kind of see what's up. But y'all should come to the play. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's going to be cool.
If you're a theater producer and you're like, I want to do a play in a ghost town, you can license the script from me too. RJWalkerPoet.com is where I will have it.
It would be really fun to do that at that, like, active ghost town in between Las Vegas and California. You know the one I'm talking about?
The Silver Boomtown one.
Yeah, I don't remember the name of it. But
with the Mark Twain Museum.
No. It's more easily accessible. That one is... we were just there this week last year.
Smith's Silver's Town? I don't know.
No, I know the name of it. I just can't think of it.
It has the haunted bar.
Mm-hmm. I don't know the name. No, the one I'm talking about has the, like, Penny Ann's Diner, and you can go camping there, and we've talked about going there. It's probably, like, 7 hours away from here.
Yeah.
Right? It's either right before you get into California or, like, right after. It's, like, one of the border towns.
Yes.
That would be fun to do it there.
Yeah. Anyway, let's go meet some peacocks. Elle and I are at Allen Park, where there are wild peacocks and several other forms of wildlife. We've seen two deer, and there's this brilliant male peacock.
There's two of them.
Oh.
There's that one and that
another male peacock and a female peahen.
Where is she?
Right there.
Oh, yeah. And we saw some squirrels, and we saw a red-tailed hawk.
A red-tailed hawk. And this is especially fascinating. It's one of those synchronicities.
Synchronicities!
Y'all are talking about. So this reading is for Anya, who is the costume designer for the play. Anya is from Russia. It's an immigrant. And Anya's question, surprisingly, is what kind of future is ahead of Russia? Which is serendipitous because...
Last week when we did Augury, which both of these are political questions...
Yeah, we didn't know this was Anya's question before
we
got here.
Yeah, we actually didn't know, yeah.
Yeah, last week it was, what is the future for America? And now, what is the future for Russia? And we saw a very interesting interaction between the male peacock and the red-tailed hawk.
Yeah, so if, like, just to recall the reading last week, we saw two hawks, one of which caught a prey.
Yeah, scored a kill.
And was eating it. There's the hawk again, right there.
Oh, he's back.
So... Yeah, that was a hawk. So, sorry, I was, like, watching him to see if he's going to do anything wild. It just was interesting he flew by right in that moment. He was on the left-hand side.
Yes.
Actually.
Yes.
And he stayed left. He flew left and stayed left.
When we first saw him, though, he was on our right.
Yeah, he was on our right. So when we got here, we were kind of looking at the park, waiting, because it's closed today, so we were waiting for it to get opened. And the peacock, like, started showing his... like, fanning his tail.
Which is not very common to see in Allen Park.
Yeah, like, the peacocks are very unthreatened. Literally, there's just, like, tens of them, like, a bunch of peacocks, and they all live pretty harmoniously, yeah.
And people
don't bother
them. And it's just snowed. They're not really in the mood for breeding. It's not really their breeding
time.
Yeah,
it's not breeding time. So anyway, he, like, fanned his huge tail for, like, ever, for, like, a couple of minutes.
It started going around in a circle.
Yeah, and then we saw the hawk leave the tree and fly behind one of the buildings. So it's kind of interesting to me that we saw a hawk twice in a row.
Yeah, and it looked like when the hawk went behind the building, he swooped down really fast. It looked like he was eyeing some squirrels, and he may have caught one.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, he didn't have anything when he just flew by, but that was, like, 30 minutes ago. So definitely could have been. So anyway, it's kind of interesting to me because Anya actually told us their question after we had already witnessed that. And so I wasn't sure if we were going to find more animals because it's snowy, so there aren't any animals out. So I was contemplating, like, who was the peacock and who was the hawk in the question, like, in the interaction that I saw. And I was like, well, last week it was hawk, this week it's hawk. Like, who is defending property and who's, you know, approaching.
Attacking, yeah.
And so I was just kind of reflecting on that. And I'm going to kind of stick to my, like, not making specific predictions about this war and about this conflict because I feel that it's inappropriate. And that's how cults start. And I don't want to start a cult. So I said that I would do this question, like, in terms of what it means for her.
Well, there goes the hawk. And now he's in the tree right above the peacock.
The peacock's
got an eye on him.
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of like an ongoing augury thing, right? Of this, like, moving in and out and looking and assessing and trying to figure things out. It doesn't feel, like, peaceful, but it doesn't feel necessarily... It feels tense, but not full of conflict, I guess is what I would say. And what I'm getting that is, like, in terms of, like, her life, her family, her relationship to Russia feels like it's going to get, like, heightened, or that there's going to be things that need to be addressed in it, but that ultimately people will be able to defend what's theirs, and kind of like predator or beauty wins. And it's like the people who focus on the beauty in a weird way. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it did look like the peacock was intimidating the hawk.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, off. Just like, I will fight
posturing
you.
Posturing.
Yeah. And
the,
like,
way
the
peacocks
peacock
do.
Is bigger than the hawk. I don't know. It's kind of, it's really interesting. I think given the amount of predator birds we've seen.
Yeah. Birds of prey. And, like, the birds of prey are not super uncommon in Utah, but you definitely have to find them. You have to go out of your way.
And we've looked for them, and we're like, we're going to do augury. You know, like, we told the universe, and the universe sent us these birds, and all of them have been hawks.
Yeah.
That's what the Mormons say.
And the peacock, we definitely expected to find peacocks here because this is a peacock habitat.
Yeah, but not a hawk at all.
Yeah.
So.
He's still up in the tree. He's looking at the squirrels down in the
enclosure.
The enclosure.
Yeah, I think that it just is, like, there's this mounting tension, and I think, I don't know, the thing that occurred to me when I was walking is that Russia will get what it wants, but not necessarily through intense conflict.
Russia the people or Russia the government?
I think Russia the government.
Or Russia the people related to Anya, who the reading is for.
I think Russia, the government, will get what it needs, but not necessarily have to...
What it needs, not what it wants?
Fully... No. Like, what it feels like it's going after. I don't know what that is. I'm not sure what the thing is. I don't know what the, like, desire is. But it feels to me like they're going to find that. They're going to figure out how to have that. But what's making me nervous is how many different, like, interferences we're seeing. Like, how many different animals are coming in. So it's kind of like almost that... I think that maybe the perception is it could be pretty easy if people didn't get involved. But I think where we're going to start having things get really complicated is where the hawk is... Oh, we just had another peacock flap up into a tree. And there's another one on the roof. So there's three male peacocks I'm looking at right now. And so as these things start coming up, the desires get really complex. Like, the hawk wants the squirrel, and the squirrel wants to live, and the peacock wants his hound to be safe.
That was a peacock call.
Agreeing. He wants his home to be safe. And so where that could become an issue is a lot of people feeling like they want to intervene. And I don't know that I have an exact answer for what Russia's future is or necessarily her future with Russia, so much as just an observation that it's really complex. Like, fuck. I don't like the. We're watching like melodramas play out. The hawk flew over there.
Bird
there's
drama.
Another peacock over there. Like, it's a lot.
Yeah, there's definitely bird drama happening.
Yeah, and so I don't want to say that, you know, the Russian thing is bird drama, but that there's a lot of complex desires and things at play. There's the hawk again.
No, that's a second hawk.
That one left.
Oh. He's back. Okay, now he's leaving. He's, like, aiming the other direction.
Yeah, he's like, heading out on the right side. So maybe it's that, like, Russia might be like, I'm good.
Yeah,
like,
you know what? This was more than I bargained for.
I didn't think I wanted this, actually.
They're juicy squirrels, but I don't think I want to deal with these peacocks.
Yeah, like, literally the hawk and the peacock are almost at eye level staring at each other. I don't know if you've ever seen a peacock roosting in a tree, but I'm going to get a picture for the Instagram so people can see it.
Well, Anya, I hope that reading is helpful to you. I don't know how helpful these readings can kind of be at times like this. Sometimes you can draw hope from them. Sometimes that hope can be misplaced. But I hope that at least it gives you some kind of peace. And you can always return to Allen Park and meet these peacocks and maybe this hawk. I don't know if this is its habitat or if it is just scoping it out, but... Yeah.
Hit us up on Patreon and Elle will do a reading for you on the show, patreon.com/mancy. If you like my writing, you can find books at rjwalkerpoet.com.
If you wanted to get a reading from me, you can find me on Etsy at Laurels of Lux. My website, laurelsoflux.com, and also laurelsoflux@gmail.com. Also, this is like super late in the episode, and probably no one's still listening, but I'm actually going to start selling products through my Etsy.
Crystals!
Yeah, I'm going to start with crystals. The book that I'm writing will be available on there. And so if you're like wondering, I don't know, like if you're intrigued by the things that I owned in my store, I guess it's kind of a weird voyeuristic way to do that, but I'll start offering products sometime during the month of March.
Maybe we'll do geomancy next while you've got this like rack and buckets of magic rocks.
Well, so the rack and buckets of crystals is probably going to be here. This is probably until I'm making enough money to get another office to move it into, which would be the end goal. So, yeah, maybe we'll do some geomancy. But if you guys were wondering, like, if you were interested in what I would carry and what that would look like, that's going to be an offering that starts happening soon.
All right. Music was provided by, in order of appearance, Hayden Folker, Miyu, and Scott Buckley.